Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I saw over the weekend that there had been some movement, possibly an agreement on steel tariffs with the EU and the US. And I'm going, could this be a good thing? I'm not sure. I should probably find out, which is why I've asked my next guest to come share some thoughts on, well, this grand deal that could be a good thing. That's why I've asked Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website. These are the folks who, well, they're fighting for our steel industry and fighting for to bring manufacturing back to our shores. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it is great to be with you tonight.
So let's jump right into this. I saw the agreement that we're going to reduce the tariffs, do something on potentially dumping maybe, but a coordinated kind of effort in addressing China. I'm not thinking this is bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's the best way to characterize it is that it is a fair deal. It's a fair deal for steelworkers. It's a fair deal for the steel manufacturers. It's a fair deal for the industries that have been subject to the retaliation from the European Union. You know, they've had 25% tariffs on bourbon and Harley Davidson's and a whole bunch of stuff since Trump put these tariffs into effect in 2018. And it's a fair deal for the climate, for climate goals too. And, you know, just to give a little bit of background about why we're here in the first place, you know, in 2018, the Trump administration decided after a lot of debate and delay to impose 25% tariffs on all imported steel at the beginning. Now, they gradually rolled that back. They took them off of Mexico. They took them off of Canada. They made a deal with Australia. They made a quota deal with Korea and a quota deal with Brazil. And so the Biden administration a few months ago said, you know, we're going to seek to make a deal with the European Union on this. And you know, let's be honest here. The European Union is not China when it comes to trade cheating, but it's also not angelic, okay? So it had some challenges. And so what does this mean? This basically means that there's a quota set. So steel below a certain number of millions of metric tons can come into the United States every year at the regular tariff rate. But if it gets above that total, then a 25% tariff would kick in. That's to prevent import surges and to provide some level of protection for the industry. Now, in return, what happens, the Europeans take their retaliatory tariffs off of bourbon and all that other stuff, number one. Number two, they agree that the steel they're sending to the United States under this quota system has to be what's called melted and poured in the European Union, that right. It can't be Russian steel coming in or Chinese steel coming in that they're then fabricating and coming into the United States. And number three, they're going to work with the United States to come up with a steel trade climate plan that's going to seek to decarbonize steel as much as possible and hold China to account, because China is way behind on all of this stuff, and particularly way behind on the American producers and the European producers for making this happen. So this is certainly a fair deal. It could be a good deal. You know, if we get the infrastructure bill passed, that's another great shot in the arm for the steel industry in the United States, because you think of the rebar, the structural steel, all the stuff that would get made there, as well as the Build Back Better plan that's still coming together. You know, you think renewable energy and wind turbines. Well, under that, there's a Made in America provision that says you're going to get the tax credits if the products are made in the United States. So this is potential. This is certainly fair. This is potentially very good for steelworkers in the United States as well.
The second part you brought up about, you know, the poured and melted in the EU. How are you going to track that? You know, this is one of those things where it sounds good on paper. How do you track that?
Yeah, well, there'll have to be some verification. So that's obviously very important. And, We know the steelmakers that are likely to pass through steel that's coming from Russia and China. For instance, Baosteel bought an Italian operation. Baosteel is the largest steel company in the world. It's owned by the Chinese government. Okay, so that's one focal point. Another is there's a Russian steel company that has operations in Europe. So you look there. But I think the monitoring of that is going to be very, very important as we move ahead. And so the work is yet to come on that. But that's something that I know that our U.S. Trade Representative's office is very aware of, and the Commerce Department. And Rick, I would just say this: everybody in the Biden administration, from the president on down, has made sure to seek the input of steelworkers as this was being put together, so that it would be done in a manner that's fair. And you know what? I like that. I think that's welcome, because usually who's writing our trade agreements, who's writing our trade policy? The big multinational companies and their lobbyists. And so it's nice to have domestic workers to have a seat at the table. And that is one of the refreshing changes of the Biden administration when it comes to trade policy.
Now, I'm thrilled about that, but on the climate side, and Joe Biden said that this agreement would crack down on dirty steel. And as you pointed out, China is the biggest carbon emissions person in the country in the world. Now we historically have been that, and we're still quite high. But China's right now, they're without question, hands down, they're number one. And this they're saying is going to help maybe rein some of that in. But I saw a comment by John Kerry, I guess it was back, oh, I don't know, maybe January, I think, where he called climate a critical standalone issue and said that he believed that the US and China needed to find a way to compartmentalize the climate discussion, to which his counterpart in China said no. He said, I quote, US-China climate change cooperation cannot be separated from the larger environment of U.S.-China relations. And the fact that Xi Jinping didn't show up to the climate summit this weekend, I think, kind of points in that direction. So on the climate front, if you've got the number one polluter not showing up and also saying, look, if you don't give us what we want and let us keep eating your lunch, nothing for you, this doesn't bode well, I don't think.
It is tricky. I completely agree. I do think that enlisting allies in this effort is going to be the way to go, rather than kind of a go-it-alone approach, just the U.S. versus China. I don't think that sets up anybody for great success. But if we enlist, Mexico and Canada and the European Union and Japan and the United Kingdom, and we're able to form an agreement that sets carbon output goals for the steel sector. And why this is important, Rick, just so your listeners know, industrial output of carbon is one of the leading contributors, obviously, to carbon emissions in the United States. And within that, steel is one of the largest single sectors of that. And this is also important because China makes almost 60% of the world's steel now. So if you deal with this issue, and you deal with China in particular, you're making measurable progress on reducing carbon emissions. I mean, this isn't trivial. These would be major changes in carbon emissions. And so China will have a choice. They can have a seat at the table, or they're going to find themselves isolated. And I think, I think the other countries will be looking at other measures that will range from punitive, from excluding Chinese steel, or to putting some sort of a border adjustable carbon fee on steel or steel-containing products that are coming from China. And that may be the way to go. And the other thing China will need to do is rein in its steel industry, because they literally have what we would call zombie steel mills that are operating in China. They make way too much steel in normal times, not only for their own market, but for the rest of the world as well. And they're adding so much carbon output. And, you know, it has such a damaging effect, obviously, on the steel market around the world, but also on our climate as well. And so I think it's imperative for the EU, the US to follow up on this. And what's going to be very important, Rick, is that, you know, the US has been willing to provide some leadership on this. And now with Biden, they're very serious about this. The European Union has been reluctant to challenge China in the past on these issues. And so I hope that this agreement represents a step in the right direction to push the European Union in the right direction on China, yeah, steel and climate policy as well.
I hope it pushes us back in a direction where we start talking about domestic production for domestic consumption, because this idea that we're going to move to a green economy, I got solar panels on my roof. Sadly, they were made in China. Couldn't find ones at the time made in the U.S. Yeah. Because they were being crushed because we didn't help protect those industries that were just coming up. Does it have to be, if we're going to move to a solar windmill geothermal future, does it have to be made in China?
No, it doesn't have to be. In fact, you know, Biden said that at Pittsburgh. He said there's no reason why the windmills that we'll have, the wind turbines, have to come from Beijing. They should be coming from Pittsburgh. And the way you do that is through policy and incentives. That's how other governments have helped to grow their renewable energy manufacturing. I mean, Germany is a great example of this. There's no reason why Germany should have much or any solar manufacturing. It is a dark country that is northern. It does not have a comparative advantage in sunshine. Yet it has a massive solar structure because of government policies that are in place. And so it's as simple as that. If we have Buy American for solar, if we have the tax incentives, we will have solar manufacturing jobs in the United States. And we're seeing that already because there are some tariffs in place and they have helped generate new factories for solar panels and the solar supply chain in the U.S. This policy works if you give it a chance.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sound policy, smart investment, you know, it's what we need, leadership, visionary leadership. But yet when I talk about, you know, U.S. made solar panels, all I get back thrown back at me from my Republican friends is Solyndra. You know, look at what Solyndra did. I'm going, yeah, you underinvested on it and you didn't prioritize it. No wonder it failed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that the renewable energy funding that was in that, and God, that was so long ago now, that was 12 years ago. And people still bring this up. I mean, that was a one-off. It wasn't a sustained investment. And so you will have some that thrive and you'll have a few that fail. And unfortunately, Republicans are focused on the one or two that didn't make it across the finish line. That always happens. That happens in any circumstance. So if you have the right policies, if you build the market to last for decades, you will get that investment. You will get those companies creating those jobs here in the United States so that we're not just trading foreign oil for made in China solar panels, that we're doing it right here.
Yeah. Now, normally for me, it's too early to be talking about anything Christmas. But, you know, with the anticipated shortages and the supply chains that are struggling, we got to talk about what to get under the tree this year and start, I guess, a little bit early. Personally, I'm done with all of my Christmas shopping. And I'm always done at this time of the year because I get the easy stuff. I get things that are about the, you know, the size of a bill, and I put them in an envelope because it's always the right size and it's always the right color and it never has to be returned. But for people who actually want to buy the boxes and stuff things in it and wrap it up, there are a lot of good places that manufacture stuff right here at home that we should be promoting.
Yeah, there are. And a little later this month, we're going to have a massive holiday gift guide come out on our website that will feature great gifts from literally all 50 states that are made in the United States. And of course, those products aren't sitting on a shipping container somewhere waiting to be offloaded at a port, you know, because Walmart and all these other companies have hundreds of thousands of shipping containers that they send from China over here every year. And so we'll be highlighting that. And the great thing about a Made in America gift is that it delights someone. It's a total surprise when they get it. They're like, oh my God, you know, we either they appreciate it because it's union made or it's sustainable or it's local. Or it is to them, to a lot of folks, it's the novelty of finding a Made in America product. And it's far more meaningful.
Yeah.
And these are great quality products. Instead of having to buy five t-shirts that are going to last you, you know, four washings each, you can buy a great t-shirt that's gonna last for 10, 15 years, assuming you can still fit into it.
Yeah, you remember the days of the old concert shirts that never seemed to, you know, you had it forever? You know, I bought my kids, you know, t-shirts, and they're falling apart because they're garbage. And this is where, you know, I keep coming back to, at some point, do we not go the manufacturing we want done is quality manufacturing and not just cheap?
Yeah. Well, I know because we've checked in with them that, you know, the companies that are making like great built to last products in the United States, you know, in clothing and other sectors, they're doing very well right now. Because I do think there's more of a wake-up call. I think it started during the pandemic about this. I think it's a little more widespread. Rick, the real problem here is that where consumers shop now is places limitations on the kinds of Made in America products you get. If you look on Amazon, it's impossible, virtually. I mean, 40% of the sellers on Amazon are actually literally based in China. They're not even based in the United States, they're based in China. You know, if you go to a Walmart and you step outside the grocery aisle or their Staples, because they do have some Made in America products, it's really hard to find Made in America, but literally that's where most Americans are shopping. But if you're able to widen the lens a little bit and just do 5 minutes of research, you can find some really great products for everybody in the family. And so I'm hopeful that we'll be able to help some folks find a way.
Well, I am looking forward to that guide at the end of the month. Can't wait for you guys to get it out. And when you do, we will put it out and make sure people have the opportunity. But Scott, I appreciate the time. Appreciate the work you do. Thanks so much.
Always, Rick. Great to be with you. Keep up the great work.
Good stuff. Our good friend Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Make sure you check out their website, AmericanManufacturing.org. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.